Hello, everybody. Welcome to Dogs and Hogs with Russ Tanner. My name is Rodney Nabulsi. I'm kind of filling in for Bobby Andrews, who's busy this week. He did a great job covering the NFL Combine for us this past week, so he gets the night off, and he's got some stuff to do. I guess he wants to see his family or some garbage like that.
Vacation Bobby.
Yeah, vacation. Yeah, always taking a vacation. But and we had some great coverage from the NFL Combine. We'll get into kind of where the guys are projected to go in the NFL draft now that the Combine is over. You've seen some risers. You may have seen some fallers, but there's some pretty interesting stuff there. But it is spring break at the University of Georgia, and I have to go to a guy who played football at the University of Georgia, Russ Tanner, and ask him, what is spring break like for these football players? For me, I was a student paying my own way. I worked most spring breaks, but that's not poor me. I also know that I've seen football players who had to work the whole spring break, you know, because they weren't getting paid at the time. And they got to lift, and they got to turn in how much running they did and how much lifting they did in spring break. You see videos of guys working out spring break all the time. So, Russ, give us some spring break perspective and maybe a story that you can tell.
Well, yeah. You know, spring break perspective, I think it's different for those guys now, because when we did it back in my day, long time ago, now 20 years, we would start spring practice a lot of times and have spring break in the middle of that and have to come back and practice again afterwards.
I remember that. Yeah.
It's dumb because, I mean, you know, no matter how wholesome and good you try to be, you're not exactly optimizing your athletic performance potential in your body on spring break as a college kid. I mean, for the most part, spring break for these dudes, just like most people expect, they're trying to go to the beach. They're trying to go somewhere out of town. They're trying to go hang out with their boys. I saw Tate Ratledge went killing a turkey down in South Florida, our buddy Cade Brock. So, I mean, they're trying to get out of town, man. Like, college football is such a grind. It's such a continuous grind that if they get a slight glimmer of time away, the opportunity to do something not at the football facility, they're gone. So, yeah, they're being very much college students right now. You know, I think that Kirby, I've heard stories about over the spring break week, he'll tell guys they have to text him a picture or a video of them doing something on spring break, like two workouts a week. And Kirby didn't tell me this because Kirby didn't tell people stuff like this, but I heard that our two-time national champion quarterback that was here a few years ago sent Kirby a video of him doing pull-ups on the back of a wakeboarding boat with some cut-off shorts and some friends, both on the football team and not. So, you know, I think that the workouts on spring break are a little hit or miss, to say the least. But, you know, man, those guys need it. It's important because when they come back, it's all hands on deck. I mean, Kirby don't play, dog. I mean, when it's time to get back rolling and it's time to try to win another national championship, which starts when they get back from spring break, really. Spring practice around the corner, G-Days around the corner, all-season workouts around the corner. Before you know it, it's fall camp. Those things come with no stop anymore. You don't get to go home for the month of May and June to take time off. So they enjoy spring break to get out of town. It's one of the few times in your career that you're able to be a true college student, go hang out with other college kids doing what the average college kid does. So us as fans, we just hold our breath, right? We want to make sure there's no breaking news. We want to make sure that Roddy doesn't put something on the board saying what we're hearing. Like, those are the ones that we hate. We don't want to hear any of that stuff. No police records, no arrest warrants, none of that stuff happening. So you just hope they're smart, don't get in trouble, and come back in one piece.
I'm thinking Brandon Smith, Bakari Rambo. Pictures of a giant keg being held over someone's head. We've got some stories about spring break. And,
well, for the record, that guy made a lot of money in the NFL, like probably the most of any dog. So
he did. And I'm not banging on him, but that was his chance to be a college student. And for the longest time, every time there was a spring break, I would put out this tweet. Go have a great spring break, guys. Don't eat any brownies that you didn't see baked. You know, if you wake up and find one on the counter and you're in a room full of 30 guys, you know, in a condo, don't eat the brownies on the counter. I'm just warning you, don't do it. Yeah, so, but now one of our sponsors actually makes brownie mix, so...
get some of those. Well, actually, they probably can't, but
they can't. So we're like, hey, no, if you see a Rogue Shop on it, do not eat those trees at all. But no, I like the fact that they can get away and get a break. They absolutely need it because Tuesday practice starts, And I know for the longest time, there was like a Sunday weigh-in. It's like, yeah, hey, yeah, you get the week off. Go have fun. Sunday night, when you get back here and we have a team meeting, you're going to have to weigh in, you know? So you couldn't go too nuts because to your you had it in the middle. It would break up spring practice, spring camp. Their first practice is Tuesday. And then
Tuesday after spring break?
Tuesday after spring break.
Yeah, that's brutal, dude. And the crazy thing is now, like, with the culture that's been created and with the level of recruiting that's happened over there, unless you're one of the absolute dudes coming back who knows you're a 2 or 3 year starter, you know, the Tate Ratledges of the world. Why am I blanking on some of those guys that are just that Malachi Starks. Right. If you're anybody but the top 3 or 4 guys on the team, like, your job's on the line when you come back in spring ball. If you don't think it is, you're mistaken. The talent that's over there and, you know, right up the road on Lumpkin Street in Athens now is wild. And those guys want to play, man. It's a bunch of alpha dogs. So, unfortunately for these players on the UGA team, they can't go off and be buck wild for all of spring break. They got to start cutting it down about Wednesday or Thursday of the week and be ready to get back into some kind of shape because Tuesday comes quick.
Yeah, and they won't be in pads Tuesday. They have to do the acclimation thing. But a guy can take your job in shorts.
You know, 100%.
There's 22 new players over there. You got all those freshmen that have been through it. You know, early enrollees who've been they've been lifting all those weights for months. Mm-hmm. Now their chance to fight for a spot. You got there's 3 wideouts transfers. You know that you got Michael Jackson wants to win a spot. London Humphreys wants to win a spot. Colby Young 100%. Wants to win a spot.
And those guys come in with something to prove too. By the way. They're not resting on the laurels with that. And you're not friends. You're not boys. I mean, you want to be good teams. You want to be tight with your guys and all that. But ultimately, like, these guys are trying to play, man. They're trying to make it to the league. There's not a player on Georgia's roster that doesn't have aspirations to make it to the league if they're competing for a starting job for the University of Georgia. That's what they want to do. So when they come back in spring practice, I mean, it's nut-cutting time. I mean, you got to get after it if you want to be on the field in the fall. And it starts on Tuesday, like you said. So, you know, the boys got to come back ready, man.
Yeah, to that point, we had a great article by Dane Young today. And I'm sticking on the screen here. You talked about everybody on that team wants to be drafted.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's a lot of them that will be. We'll probably see at least 10 guys from this past class. I'm just thinking about Georgia's inside linebackers. All those guys are going to be drafted, you know, in the coming years. But go back just 2 years ago, 2021, Georgia wins its first title in 40 some odd years. Keely Ringo takes the interception back to the house, pick 6. Everybody goes nuts. And I remember when that season started, Georgia faced Clemson, and I predicted Clemson to win. And granted, they barely won. Chris Smith's pick 6 was the difference maker there. But I said Georgia's going to get better as the year goes on. I was wrong twice. They beat Clemson, and they didn't just get better. They were great. We didn't know how great they were going to be. Right now, if you look at the last 2 years in the draft, I got it on the screen there, there were 8 first-round draft picks.
Yeah.
8. Now, think about that LSU 2019 team that everybody says is one of the greatest college football teams of all time. They had 7 first-round draft picks.
Yeah.
Georgia had 8 in the last 2 years, and you're going to have a couple more. It's coming out right now. So,
and by the way, if you go back and look at those 8 too, by the way, I mean, you know, you got Jordan Davis, Devontae Wyatt, Lewis Saint, all those guys. But if you look on there right now, Jalen Carter was drafted 9, and he's probably the biggest value in that entire draft at a number 9.
Yeah.
If you look at him right now. So, I mean, you got 2 guys, Trayvon Walker. You know, Trayvon Walker got picked first. A lot had to do, by the way, with his combine results, his pro day results, how big, fast, and strong. And fortunately for him, he started turning on the field this past year specifically for Jacksonville. But, you know, Jalen Carter, you've got 2 guys that really should have been top 3 picks in NFL draft on 1 defensive line out of there. And Jordan Davis was kind of the poster child for it. So I don't think we realize how good that defense was until we do things like look back at this right here, at this little chart, this stat showing the amount of purely defensive guys that were drafted. Broderick Jones, I mean, that's the only offensive guy drafted, right? That's wild, dude. Right. That's unbelievably wild.
And then, of course, you know, George Pickens, James Cook get in there. But, hey, N'Kobe Dean, Channing Tindall, Darnell Washington, Samir White, Kamara, Ringo, Bennett, Beal, McClendon, Smith. Just absolutely loaded. Then let's look at what's going to happen this year. You're going to have Brock Bowers and Marius Mims both go in the first round.
Easy. Okay. Yep.
Kamari Lassiter might.
Might squeeze in. And Ladd.
Might squeeze in.
Yeah.
Ladd's been projected as being close there. So,
you know, and I'd be surprised, right? We're going to do cartwheels and hope. Like, Ladd has some questions he's got to answer, unfortunately. Now, again, to this dude's credit, he's done nothing but answer them at the combine stuff, from his speed to his quickness. Like, that drill they do where the receiver runs across, like, the 50-yard line and catches the ball this side, catches the ball this side. Yeah. The gauntlet, yeah. A lot of the guys are doing this number right here, man. They look like the sneaky snake going across the field. When Ladd did it, that's the smoothest route run. It's the smoothest gauntlet probably in the history of the NFL combine. Like, find me one that looked better than his did. But, you know, the thing that all the – if the NFL guys can be comfortable with Ladd's health history, feeling like he's passed whatever ailments he had, the things that he was banged up with, he's a first-round guy. If not, he's probably an early second-round guy, which is still unbelievable.
Which is why he's not going to go in the first round. Because, yeah,
I agree.
Don't get me wrong. I actually tweeted out, take him in the first round. Get him. If you need a receiver, get him. I understand. But the way the NFL – they were looking at – I think we had Jed May on saying that they were checking out, like, Kendall Milton's elbow from an injury he had in the eighth grade. I tell the story all the time of being at the combine waiting on John Theus to show up. John Theus shows up, like, 2 hours late, and they had heard about an ankle injury or something like that, and they had an MRI. They threw him in the MRI machine to double check him. They go over these players as if they were quarter horses going to run in the Kentucky Derby. Yep. They poke you, prod you. If they think there's a hairline fracture, and of course, every player is trying to hide everything that's ever happened to them. So we talk about getting calls all the time from scouts, you know, hey, what do you think of this kid? A lot of times it's a question about, you know, we've heard this about character, we've heard that about character. They're never calling to say, can he catch, can he throw, any of that stuff. They're calling us as media people going to know, hey, when you went to see Derrick Henry in Yulee, what positions was he playing? Because he said he's never played, he did this and did that. Did you see that in person? Yeah. And so when he flipped, yeah, it's always they're looking for a reason not to take you.
Yeah.
And if you've had back issues that are kind of hard to explain to people, someone says, hey, we won't take him with our first pick. We'll take him with our second, third, fourth pick and just cross our fingers and lads there. So I just don't see it happening.
Yeah. I agree with that. But I mean, he's going to end up being a dude. Then, you know, you can talk about NFL, the combine guys. You know, Kamari Lassiter hasn't got a shot to be a late first round guy. Then you think about the other guys that really helped their draft stock. We look at Tyke Smith. We look at Javon Bullard. And just I'm looking on the breakdown you guys did the other day about all the guys, how they fared this year. You know, those guys, Javon Bullard ran a 4.47. Tyke Smith ran a 4.46. Like, we realize that that's extremely elite, correct?
Yeah,
I mean, correct. If you're running below 4.5, you are elite in the speed category.
Let me interject one thing real quick. Don't lose your train of thought. Georgia will show them, Coach Donna mentioned this the other day, they will show them game time GPS data saying, look, this kid hit 22 miles an hour on this run. He hit 21 miles an hour. He averaged 17 miles an hour across 40 plays. They've got hard data that Georgia will give these scouts next Wednesday at Pro Day.
Yeah. And the scouts, the combine is made for guys to catch a scout's eye. The combine is made to just show somebody what you can physically do. Let them see you move. Let them see you be coached. But the pro day coming up, stuff that we don't get to see, like, that's what really determines it for these guys. But, you know, what an advertisement for Georgia, by the way. If you go through the Ladd McConkeys and then you watch a Marius Mims run, I mean, that's got to be the most impressive thing from the combine if you go back and look at it. I mean, is there – how many human beings on the planet – are that big and can move that fast? I mean, it's scary with him. And he made a lot of money with that, right? I mean, he made who knows how many millions of dollars. If he moves up 10 spots in the draft, which he probably did, I saw him projected late first round. He's probably going to be a mid first rounder now. And then all of a sudden. So
what I have on the screen here right now for folks that are, and I hate it for people listening to the podcast, you can't see it, but on the screen right now is we have a listing of all the mock drafts of people that actually have been good in the past. Not every media outlets. We don't do, you know, PFF or CBS or any, you know, outlet. We actually do people whose this is their job is do mock drafts. And we got Amarius Mims at 14, 21, 21, 18, 18. So, like you said, right in the middle of the first round.
Yep. And I saw, and you see, so what happens is these scouts, let's say there's a guy for the Titans watching it, like, oh, Amarius Mims, all right, 507. He's 6'8", 340 pounds, around a 507. Now, let me go look at him. And all of a sudden, I saw a stat the other day at the combine. Amarius Mims had the lowest percentage of QB pressures allowed on pure passing plays of any lineman in the draft. So all of a sudden, these guys who have been looking at these, you know, these pretty Big Ten guys, some offensive tackle from, there's always offensive tackle from Iowa or Wisconsin.
Yeah. Right?
the guys at Notre Dame.
It's always Wisconsin.
Cornbread mule that is just a big, thick ankle joker. And all of a sudden, you're like, all right, he's pretty good. Well, if that guy comes in the SEC and tries to line up and block Will Anderson, tries to line up and block Nolan Smith, tries to line up and block any of these guys off the edge who are freak athletes, they struggle. You look at Amarius Mims, he played the best defensive lineman in the country every week and had the lowest percentage of pass rush, the lowest percentage of, I don't know the right way to say it. Nobody got past him. He had the best percentage of that in pass pro. So, you know, guys like that made a ton of money, man. And I'm excited for him. I really am.
No, you're right. I thought that Ladd made money. Kamari did. Amarius Mims, absolutely. And we knew he was going to be a top pick. But,
yep.
Again, major questions about the sheer number of games he played because he was beat up. So there were some pundits going, well, he didn't play a whole lot. He had surgery mid-season and came back. And if you have ankle surgery and you are at 340 pounds, 6'8", and you come back to play, that's pretty damn impressive. And again, you know it and I know it, and it's a dirty little secret. There are a lot of guys who play college football and who play professional football who hate football. Because they're forced to do it. They know it's their meal ticket. They're of that size that they can do it, but they freaking hate it. And sometimes they're like, well, is this guy just going to say, hey, that's enough. I signed my first contract. I'm done. I got my money. I'm leaving. So they want to see that you have that fire in you to actually come back. So I think Amarius Mims made himself money. He could have sat out. There are people telling him, hey, sit out. You're good. You don't need to come back for the championship games. You're good. But he came back, and I think that made him money. Then they see, oh, well, he's got that bad ankle. He ran 5.074.
Yeah.
5.0.
It's freaky. It's a freak. I mean, he's a freak human being, and, you know, good for him, man. I mean, Georgia, again, is going to be, after this draft, when they show every team who had the most players drafted, Georgia's going to be on every single graphic again. They may not have as many as Alabama this year. I mean, there may be somebody with more actual players drafted, but you're going to see Georgia's name up there. And it's all about recruiting. It's all about recruiting. It's all about recruiting, especially when you're in a situation where Kirby is very sharp with how he deals out the NIL money. If he can look and say, look, we got Ladd drafted early second round. We got Marcus Rosemary Jack Saint drafted fourth round. You got two receivers drafted now. Well, guess what? You may be able to get more talented receivers on your roster, and the proof is in the pudding with that. So this stuff matters. Like, the average fan may be like, what's it even matter to me? It's whatever. They played at Georgia.
They're gone. Yeah,
it matters, man. It matters for the program. It really and truly does. So,
you know. And to your point, Kirby's going to say, look, on that 2021 team, we had 35 players drafted.
35.
We have 80, you know, because look, there's 25 over the last 2 years. And let's say they get 10 more this year. Okay. Mm-hmm. It could be 11. Might be 12, could be 8 or 9, but let's just assume 10. Get 10 guys drafted, because that's 35. So, and again, that's just at Georgia.
Yeah.
Jermaine Burton, A.D. Mitchell. Yep. You know, there are other guys who could get drafted who were a Bulldog on that team. Yep. So,
Amir Speed.
Yeah, absolutely. So, there's other guys who could get drafted. And he says, hey, look, you know, hey, we don't claim them, but we picked them, we developed them, we get partial credit, you know. My point is, the number one thing that when you talk to a recruit, you're talking to Juju Lewis. Okay, we had an update on him at UGASports.com today.
I like that one, by the way.
Yeah. So this is a kid who is the number one quarterback in the day. She's now the number one player. He's reclassified to the class of 2025. He's committed to USC. Do you want to go play at USC? Absolutely. That coach out there makes Heisman Trophy winners all the time. But if you come to Georgia, we're going to surround you with great players and great development. So if you're trying to get Juju Lewis, who's going to get a ton of money wherever he goes, the fact that you can say, yeah, USC puts some guys in the league, but not as many as we do. So every kid, when you talk to them, they want two things. They want to get to the league or they want a good NIL deal. Some say, I want to win games. Well, who wants to lose games? That's people say, oh, we won a championship. Recruiting is going to be easy. Hell no, it's not.
No, it ain't.
Because a lot of guys are going to say, your team loaded. I don't want to go there. You know, I want to go somewhere where I can play. So you show them that, hey, we can win championships and we're getting all these guys into the league. So you're able to say half of our roster got drafted. Mm-hmm. When most teams only get one, two guys drafted a year.
Right. Yeah. I mean, 10%, if you get 10% of people drafted, that's an unbelievable stat. And you're talking about a third of the guys on the team. It's wild. That's really wild. So I don't think it's hard to say that we underestimate how good this staff under Kirby has been, but we kind of do.
But we did.
It's that impressive. So,
well, that's why I led the thing off saying, I remember when I wrote that Georgia would lose to Clemson, I said, look, this defense isn't as good as last year's defense. And you're losing all these, your tight ends are all brand new. I mean, you've lost Isaac Nauta, you lost all these other guys, and you're replacing them with Brock Bowers and like three other guys.
Mm-hmm.
But I did know that they would get better. I'm just saying they were completely inexperienced, and you were going up against a Clemson team that's supposed to be really good. Remember, they're still kind of in their heyday. And I'm like, I just don't see that. I expect Georgia could win, but I think Clemson's going to. And again, we did not know that you were seeing greatness. And then midway through the season, you're like, man, nobody can score on these guys.
Nope.
He just got better and better. So recruiting gets it. Speaking of recruiting, I want to mention we saw something interesting come out from the Classic City Collective today. They've got a new product out there. You got to tell me what you think about this thing here. It's
the Bulldog Bar, right?
Bulldog Bar, yeah. They've got a new candy bar. Well, I say candy bar, it's a granola bar. With the chocolate on it, it says the Bulldog Bar. It's branded. It's part of the Classic City Collective. They put it out. And we did have somebody actually ask this question. They're like, well, can the Georgia football team buy this from the collective? Because, you know, then the collective has to be separate from the athletic association.
Yeah.
And they can, so long as they're giving fair market value. They're not being given it to them at some ridiculous discount. So instead of going to getting what are those?
Kind bars.
Kind bar. Thank you. Instead of buying, and you know it. The Georgia gives they have Kind bars out for their players and all those grab and go stations, you know, they have them out. Now they can go out and buy these Bulldog bars, these chocolate chip ones and stuff like that. Only 180 calories.
I like the packaging. I have no idea how they taste or if they're good for you. I have no idea with that stuff, but I mean, the packaging looks cool. I mean, maybe a collector's items one. Put them on the shelf and let my kids eat them in 30 years. Be like those old Cokes. You know, those like 1980 National Championship Cokes. Like, who opens those and tastes them? I heard people did that when we won in 2021.
Dude, we saw it because we asked people to send us your reactions to that first championship. And one of the first ones we got was a guy opening the 1980 Coke and drinking it. He said it was the grossest thing he'd ever had in his life. I think he drank it warm, too. So.
Oh, that's even worse. I don't know. I don't know about that. Yeah, I don't know about that one. But
I like, what,
we didn't,
what
we didn't crack ours open.
No. So the bars are out. You can, I don't know where, I don't know when you will be able to buy them, but the point stands. Two things that matter right now, when you're trying to get any recruit, you're trying to get a Juju Lewis, you're trying to get a David Sanders, offensive lineman, you're trying to keep Elijah Griffin, Zion Grady, all these top, you know, five-star players. You got to show them I can get them into the NFL and I can get them paid. And the Classic City Collective is having a hard time keeping up with all the sheer number of kids that want money to play at the University of Georgia. So we get zero money from the Classic City Collective, but I'm just telling you, if you're a Georgia fan and you can find a way to support the Classic City Collective, buying Hunker Vodka from ASW Distillers, buying Bulldog Bars, being part of their 21 Club, whatever, Georgia needs your help because they are behind, really behind. So,
well, and it's tough. Like, this is a Cry Me a River situation, right? But
yeah, it
is. Georgia recruits so many elite players that you got to pay them. And by the way,
they figure it out. Yeah,
they figure it out, and it's worked so far. But as it continues going on, revenue is going to be king. Revenue is going to be absolute king with college football until the NIL is changed and regulated, which we talked about on the show a ton. That's going to happen in the next few years. I don't know when, but until it changes, I've got a kid walking up to me in the living room with nothing but a towel on. Stay off camera. This is not that kind of show. Get back over there. It's wild, man. When you got four kids and people just running around and stuff, that baby boy is wild.
Speaking of my son's birthday was yesterday, so happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
That's my son. To your point, revenue is king. And we saw that basketball team just – they're actually forming a union.
Yeah.
The ones like that were hired employees recently.
Hey, that's all fun and games. One of them jokes gets fired, by the way. So, which is going to happen. So.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I put my guys through a performance review. I'm sure you do as well. You know, it's like, oh, when I hired you, I was expecting X. You produced Y.
Yep.
That ain't getting it. So, hey, you're fired.
Yep. It happens. And you give yourself a union like that. Like, college sports is changing. We could go to a whole multiple shows about that. It's changing. It's changing in a hurry. But in the meantime, back to what's on the screen that way. You've got to do what you can to help the revenue from the collective and the powers that be over there to be able to recruit the type of players that Georgia wants to have. If you don't have the revenue to pay the players that are top-end talent guys, you're not going to win national championship in the current state of college football. So, you know, stuff like this. Like, oh, what's the big deal about that? If you're buying junky granola bars from whatever grocery store you go to down the street, buy these instead. I mean, literally, it helps. Every little bit helps. So why not?
I thought about that. Somebody said, well, is this where we're going? You know, that you buy everything, almost like an alternative economy, that everything you buy is something Georgia branded. I'm like, yeah, well, not only products, but they could do services. Maybe you start using someone to prepare your taxes that gives 10% of the fee that you pay them to the Georgia NIL program.
Why not?
You know, you get a percentage of, you know, you refinance your mortgage with Russ Tanner. And Russ Tanner's, you know, company donates to the NIL. I could see.
Yeah.
And it's actually something that I pushed for years. I actually bought the domain name Red and Black Pages, and we actually have this at ujsports.com. Just click down through all the different message boards. One of them is Red and Black Pages. I said, look, just list your business here. If you have a Georgia-based business, if you are a plumber and you follow the Bulldogs, you're a CPA and you graduated from Georgia, you're in the music industry, a movie producer, garbage collector, and you either support the Bulldogs, you know, or are an alumnus, list your business here so that way when people go looking for something, looking for services or looking for products, you can support the Georgia fan base. Texas does this really well. Notre Dame does it phenomenally. That network of people where they support alums and fans. Now, if you start throwing NIL into that, where it's like, hey, everybody who's doing this, some of the business is coming to me as a Georgia alum. I'm going to give a percentage to the university for their NIL. That's where it's going to have to be because, or to your point, or they're going to have to change everything.
Yep. I just learned something new. I'm looking at the, I'm going to have to put my stuff on there, man, on the there red and black. I like that.
Red and black page. I want to make it its own standalone website because now it's in the UGA sports universe. But I want to make it its own website. So what I need is a web designer. I need to look on the red and black pages, find a Georgia graduated web designer to build me the red and black pages. I already own the domain name. And that way from people don't have to go to UGA Sports to find it. They can just go anywhere, redandblackpages.com, and have find, you know, anybody who graduated or even supports. People complain about sidewalk fans. I love sidewalk fans, man. You don't. Not everybody could get into Georgia. I damn sure can't now. So I'm not going to hold that against anybody. I want to switch gears real quick because we're talking about the what kids are looking for, you know, and how NIL is such a big part of the game right now. Did you see this thing about from Nick Saban saying one of the reasons he got out of coaching, a small one, but one of the reasons was he didn't like the way they lost?
Yes. It's kind of surprising to me that it's coming out like it did right now. I'm clicking.
For those who didn't say, I'll read it real quick. This is, I want to be clear that wasn't, you know, the thing, but some of these events certainly contributed. I was really disappointed in the way that we reacted after the game. You got to win with class. You got to lose with class. We had our opportunities to win the game. We didn't do it. And then showing your ass and being frustrated and throwing helmets and doing that stuff is not who we are, you know, and who we've promoted in our program. So he said that, you know, their loss kind of they were throwing helmets and they showed their ass. And he said, yeah, I'm too old for this crap.
Yeah, I mean, look, a lot of the people who watch our show and are listening can relate to this. You're like, I'm tired of these kids acting the way they do. And finally, Saban had enough of it. He left. I'm surprised, you know, and we don't get all the context of when this thing happened, who he said it to, and all that. But it just said he was talking to ESPN's Chris Lowe. So I guess he was being very open about it. That's actually pretty wild to me.
Well, he lowered tight. So Lowe breaks a lot of news concerning Alabama.
But, yeah, I mean – For the people who are worried about the youth of America and the direction of what's happening with the world and with the next generation and the next group of leaders, stuff like this for Saban should make you have cause for concern. It should make you want to parent your children a little bit tighter. It should make you want to do things to show them how to live, how to act, how to respond. And I think it's crazy, man, that Saban, who's coached that long, is that successful, is being as honest as he is, saying, I don't like what I was having to deal with. And that wasn't the only reason, obviously. But, they showed out through the helmets doing stuff. That's not who we are. That's not what we're running our program. You know, and he kind of goes on to say, I thought we were going to have a good team. Our program here is always built on how much value we can create for the future, development, academic success, graduating, develop NFL career. So what he's saying is NIL and the transfer portal has changed what college football is supposed to be. And he's right, by the way. I think they should hire Saban. Well, ESPN's already hired him now and paid him a lot of money to do it. But so he's not going to do that. But I mean, he should be like the commissioner of college football. I mean, he should be. He doesn't need the money. He loves the sport, knows the sport. Like, hire him to be the commissioner of the NIL and get him to be in charge of fixing it. I think something that's going to have to happen. So he ain't going to do
But to your point, also, whenever you have somebody come in like that, you kind of need, well, I know your kids listen to this, so I'll just say an ass. You need somebody who's not nice. You need somebody who is also immune to criticism, because you're going to have to come in and burst a lot of bubbles by saying, look, this is how it's going to be. I'm sorry you're unhappy with it. Oh, you're complaining about it? That's too dang bad. This is it. There are too many people. I saw someone say, well, you need to do it with Kirk Herbstreit. And I'm like, Kirk's a nice guy.
Yeah.
And I think he worries too much about what people would say about him. I mean, the whole Villarreal thing. You know, they said, well, about David Pollack. Now, David probably doesn't care. But again, my point is you need somebody with stones. You need somebody with an iron constitution, a, you know, steel spine, who all the criticism would just bounce off of because it wouldn't affect them. He would do what is the right thing, not what is the most political thing. So I'm with you. I'm like, you know, and the man earned it. But to your right, he loves college football more than anything.
Yep.
So, he's seen it. This is driving me out. I'm done.
I mean, and there's a little bit of a get off my lawn. I'm the old grumpy man. He's 72. It's a young man's game. Yeah. I mean, that stuff is all there. But just the feeling, and that's the concern, right, when you look at even guys like Kirby with where he's at. Like, if they don't change college football from the portal and the NIL standpoint somehow in there, you're going to run everybody off that's any good and that wants to be there for the good of the kids and the good of the game, because they just can't do it. You're going to see more and more guys going to the NFL. Like Brian McClendon, I'm sure that had something to do why he went to the NFL. And good for BMAC. Proud of him, man. Teammate, locker room guy. Loved him. Good opportunity. He's gone. But you can't tell me that part of it isn't having to do with the way the college football is now being run and done. And I don't see how Kirby can keep doing what he's doing for the next 10, 15, 20 years. If they don't change it, I mean, why not go another 3 or 4 years? Win 2 more national championships. Make $20 million, $30 million, whatever, and retire. It's a lot easier to deal with the crap they're having to deal with right now. And the combination of the and I'm pro NIL for the record. I am pro NIL. But the NIL,
we've known you. Yes.
The NIL and the portal combination, something's got to change with that. They've got to figure out how to change that. And it can't be a year to year thing where guys can leave and the NCAA says you can't, and they say we're gonna sue you, and the NCAA says, okay, now you can. Like, you've got to have rules that you enforce, or else you don't have anything. And that's where we're at. There's literally no rules right now.
Well, they tried to fix it. The news came out this week that they were going to fix the recruiting calendar and fix NIL and all this. They weren't trying to fix it. They're just trying to fix the recruiting calendar. And they came up with the idea of having a signing day in June and then a second signing day the first week of December, and then their traditional signing day the first Wednesday in February. And people are like, what are you smoking? Are you taking those rogue gummies? I mean, are you got shot marks between your toes? What the heck's going on? That does not make things better. And luckily they've kind of tabled that. They said, look, we're not going to do the June signing thing, but I don't think that moving the calendar up another 5 months, 6 months is the answer to fixing NIL and the recruiting calendar. The problem is now, you know, having it that 2/3 of the way through December, that you're trying to do your bowl practices, you're trying to get your teams together, you're trying to do the transfer portal opens up, and then you got signing day in the middle of that. The whole point of moving it up was to take the pressure off the kids, you know, who were signing in February. But to me, moving it even a few weeks earlier, okay, now you don't quite have as many things at the same time. But again, you're still making – the kids are going to have to make decisions earlier. The coaches are going to have to work harder earlier. It's just – to your point, it is not feasible. It is tougher on them. But for every coach that leaves, there's 10 coaches that will take their spot, even with the new rules.
Yeah,
they might not be as good. But to your point, there's still a lot of people that want to coach college football.
Yep. And I'm not one of these people who's like, I'm going to quit watching college football forever. Like, I love college football. I'm going to always watch college football. It's my favorite sport, and it's gonna fix itself. I'm very confident in that. I don't know how it's going to fix itself just yet, but it's going to. It's fine. It's like, you know, the answer is to slow everything down, by the way. The problem is we keep trying to move it up. And we're now in a world where every kid has to be an early enrollee. As long as you've got everybody being an early enrollee, there's not an easy fix to this NIL calendar and the recruiting calendar, because you're now having to get all this stuff figured out during football season, during the senior year of high school for these kids, and then trying to get them on campus in December, by the way. They don't even get to see Santa Claus their senior year in high school because they're trying to come up here and go to bowl practice with the team. So backing it up is the only way. It's like the Alabama song, right? I'm in a hurry to get things done. Oh, I rush until life's no fun. I mean, that's what ends up happening, right? I mean, it's a rush until life's no fun. So slowing the calendar down is the answer, but nobody's going to do that because nobody is going to be the one willing to say we should take a step back, because we're going to work on this push, and it's going to push until it breaks, and then they'll fix it. So.
Yeah, we got some of the top players in the nation are going to be visiting Georgia in the next couple of weeks because of spring practice. You got guys who are going to be taking official visits. And here's the thing. I want to see what you look like in your senior film, especially if you're an offensive lineman, especially if you're a guy that's, you know, hey, okay, we want you to play defensive end. You're 6'2.5".
Yeah.
We like to see you get 6'3", 6'3.5". You know, are you going to keep growing? Let's see how that senior tape works out. Now you got to have a kid taking his official visits as a junior, and he's not done growing, he's not done developing, and you're having to sign him in mid-June. It's stupid, to your point. Well, hell, move it back. And then moving it up, though, does give the players some safety, because, or the high school kids, some power, because they get signed before the coaches can go root through the transfer portal and get a bunch of players. But at the same time, once they sign, they're locked in. And then the transfer portal opens, and all of a sudden, hey, I was the number one defensive end of the nation when you signed me, but you just took a defensive end who transferred away from Alabama, who's a first-round draft pick. So it looks like my butt's sitting the bench. If I'd known that, I'd have gone somewhere else before you got him. So,
and the other big thing moving up to June is, so now all these kids are going to sign in June. Well, what happens if you sign at Arkansas and Sam Pittman gets fired, or Sam Pittman retires at the end of the season? I mean – you know, right now, everybody, all the coaches get fired in October, November is when it starts happening, so that they can get a new regime in and time to make connections, recruit, try to finish out a year, and get a signing class. What happens next?
Yeah, you have to pull those triggers earlier.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, so, yeah, I don't think moving up to June is going to be the answer. I don't see how that's it. I mean, what do I know? You know, I'm just an old idiot from Wrightsville, but that don't seem like the way to fix it to me.
Well, we'll switch gears here into some fun stuff. Now, being that it's the offseason, there are some very interesting questions that come up at UGA Sports on the dog event. This past weekend, I was in. I wasn't at the NFL Combine. I had three of our staffers up there. They did a great job knocking it out. Bobby Andrews, one of the co-hosts here, was up there. Jed May did a great job. Patrick Garvin had tons of videos, and we were the first outlet to actually start going to the Combine and covering it for Georgia. Now, just about everybody does. There's nothing wrong with it. Media is media. You know, we welcome our media brothers and sisters, but we've been doing it a long time. But this is one of the first ones I missed. I was in Charleston with my wife. She's at a big conference there. I was the chauffeur and, you know, getting everywhere to go. But the cool thing I found in Charleston was a bottle of bourbon. Now, I'm not a huge bourbon guy, but I like to try it. And there was a Virgil Crane vodka. It was ginger infused. I'm like, this sounds stupid. But I tried it. And it was smooth and it was good. So I went on our message board and asked, you know, because that's a great thing about UGA Sports. There's a guy on there saying, hey, I need law advice. I was, you know, I hit a woman with my car and we bumped cars and everything was done. And now I'm being sued. And it's tons of legal advice. Yeah. No matter where you go, we say, hey, where can I find
aficionados for any topic?
Any topic. Hey, I need to find the best place to watch a Georgia game in Jackson Hole. There'll be 75 responses. It's like, hey, how do you get – what do you do in Thailand? 550 responses. I mean, these people will talk about anything. But so we start talking about bourbon. It's a three-page thread about – and that's just me talking about it. The real bourbon fanatics, it'll be a 7, 8, 10-page thread. But somebody said, hey, this gives me a question. They said, how many – based on Roddy's thing – Roddy's thread, how many bottles of bourbon do you have in your house? And I thought, okay.
What was like the top answer to that?
Okay, so one guy says, you know, 25. Another guy says 50, you know, 50 bottles. I'm like, 50 bottles? That's nuts.
Yeah. You start telling me 20 to 25, I'm like, if you start telling me 20 to 25, I'll start saying, hey, you're a serious dude. Like, all right, if you're playing, you got 20 to 25, you're a serious dude.
This guy, I've got 60 to 80 that I've been drinking them down and not buying it. What? 130 to 140 if you include all whiskeys, and bourbon, rye, and scotch. I'm like, 130 bottles of liquor in your house? Where? I don't have that kind of room.
I don't have a cabinet big enough for that in my house.
I don't have a room.
All of our cabinets have sippy cups in them, but yeah.
Another guy's like, I got like 75. I'm still thinking about the 130. I couldn't get over it. One guy's got two bottles, but he's got a half a bottle of Basil Hayden and two bottles of Pappy 15. So he's got the greatest three bottles of liquor that you could get. 325 bottles.
Who are you married to? Like, what's your wife say in that situation? Like, that's what I don't understand. Like, Miss Tanner would not. Nah. We had to build another wing to the house for 325 bottles of anything to fit around here. So, yeah, that is wild.
Then we got one guy. His name is Single Barrel Dog. So, you knew he's going to have a lot. But he says he's got about 120 to 150 bottles.
He always talks about barbecue, too. Yeah. So, yeah. I follow
Great
him.
Great guy. Yeah. Another person with 130 bottles. I'm like, geez. Okay. Then we get to Riach. He says, I guess I have about 450 to 500 bottles, about $250,000 in value. 450 to 500 bottles.
Right. Either my man either needs help or he needs a round of applause. It's one of those things. I'm not sure which it is.
I mean, and when he starts laying it out, you know, you think, oh, man, this is somebody just looking for some internet clout. No, I mean, he's got it. I believe him. You know, and that guy's been a member of our board forever, so he's not coming on there alive because people remember everything you say on there. But it is nuts. So
yeah,
tell us in the comments, how many bottles of bourbon do you have?
Not 450. I haven't had that if I collected for a lifetime of anything. I wouldn't have 450 bottles of that. But yeah, good for you, man.
15 years old, I haven't drank that many.
Find your horse and ride it, man. I'm good with that. So,
well, now here's the thing: if we were to say do something, everybody's got their, like you say, everyone's got their habit, everyone's got their niche, everyone's got their hobby. If you were to ask me how many cameras I had or how much camera gear I had,
it's embarrassing.
It'd be like, I really don't want to talk about it. Let's change the topic. I don't want to talk about this.
Yeah. I posted on there about 2 or 3 weeks ago about barbecue joint recommendations. And I now have a spreadsheet, I think, of 125 different places that were recommended in the state of Georgia alone. So, you know, for our Friday barbecue reviews, I've got endless possibilities of places to go and eat barbecue. So by the time I get to the end of that list, new places will be popped up. So I feel like it's an infinity list of barbecue joints. So.
So anyway, this is a good time of year to come on the UJ Sports, get on the dog event and talk about bourbon or talk about, oh, we saw two great threads. One, what was the most disappointing concert you've ever been to? A riot thread, an absolute riot. And then what was the most, what was the concert that you expected to be trash that was fantastic?
I can try to answer those.
Okay, let's hear.
All right. The worst one I ever went to, actually the first concert I ever went to, this is like, there's a song out there right now that says, I'm Rednecker Than You. And like that should be playing in the background of this, what I'm about to say, because whatever anybody else has said, I'm about to beat them. So okay. My first concert, I went to see David Allan Coe at the Dublin Motor Speedway, a dirt track outside of Dublin, Georgia, where they race bomber cars. And David Allan Coe was playing in the infield of it. And, you know, I'm from Wrightsville. You know every David Allan Coe song there is. And yeah. He was so wasted. They had to walk him out of the stage and sit him on a bar stool. And he played like two songs and basically fell off the bar stool and left. And that was the end of the concert. Man. So that one didn't pan out. One I didn't think was going to be good that was, I like thinking about David Allan Coe. One I didn't think was going to be good, but really was. I'll say this. This is a cliche answer because I saw some cool bands in college, had some fun times with that. But as wild as it seems, when I saw Garth Brooks in concert, like I was not expecting that dude to be as good as he was in concert. I went because like, oh,
it's a hell of a show.
It was an unbelievable show. So, you know, I like Garth Brooks. I'm not against him. I don't love everything he does and all of his music, but in person, his show was unbelievable.
Well, he's going to come play Sanford Stadium. I'm just going to let everybody know who's watching. That's going to happen.
I'll be there.
Exactly. Mine was, real quick, my answer on that was I went to see a comedian, if you remember Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah.
Back in the day. And it was like, there were like three comedians, him and Dave Attell. And he was like the David Allan Coe story. He was either high or drunk. And he went out there and just bombed. I mean, to the point where people were about to start booing him, and he ended his set early. And wasn't a few years later, he was dead. You know, Ooh. Dude OD'd. So it's obvious he had an issue. But Dave Attell, the other comedian who used to do that show Insomniac, who I thought was stupid, his show, I was howling. I hurt. I laughed so hard, my diaphragm. I felt like I had a hernia. I was laughing so hard. So they were both at the same instance. That was going. I got a better question for you.
All right.
This is a better one that came up on the dog event, and I just love it. All right. See it on the screen there?
Hold on.
How many Crisco burgers could you eat in a row?
Ooh.
Or could you eat in one sitting if there was a bet for serious money on the line?
So this changes it because I love a good bet, by the way. I don't like gambling. Like, I've never sports bet in my life. I'm not a big go-to-the-casino and bet guy. Like, I'm just bad at it. So I don't like doing it.
We'll put down there's a touchdown versus Florida on the line.
All right. But if there's dumb bets, if there's dumb things involved, I'm actually all in on those kinds of bets. So Crystal's not one of our sponsors, is it?
They have sponsored us in the past, so be nice. I'd love for them to come back.
Okay. All right. I'll leave off what ends up happening on this because it ain't pretty for nobody. But when I was in college, me, Daniel Emmon, and Josh Brock went to Crystal's up on Atlanta Highway, on Prince Avenue. up there in Athens, out there by like Athens Regional in that area. And I go up to the front. We're all standing there together. And I said, I'll take a sack full and six chili cheese pups. And then Brock steps up, I'll take a sack full and six. And they're like, whoa, what? Like, I thought you were getting a sack full. I said, no, that's my sack full. So I've gone before and got a sack full, by the way, which is 12 and six chili cheese pups for no reason. That was just like a Tuesday. So there was no money on the line for that. And there was nobody that really cared. That was just big boys doing what they do at a burger place. So we hammered that. So if I could eat 12 crystals and six chili cheese pups without trying, I'm very sure I could knock down two sackfuls, 24, I don't feel like it's a challenge.
Okay.
How did I do on the board? How did I do?
You probably just kick everybody's ass. One guy said all of them.
All of them.
And a lot of people are like, yeah, back in the day, I could do like eight. Now I could do like four. I could do 15 back in the day. Now it's like five. Age has caught up with all of us, but apparently not you and your damn 24 crystals.
I don't know that I could do it anymore. If there's enough money on the line, I fasted for 2 days. I probably could, but I mean.
Yeah.
Back in my day, but it's like, again, we're talking all this music tonight. Toby Keith, I ain't as good as I once would. Rest in peace, Toby Keith. But you know, I'm as good once as I ever was. I feel like I could hit it one time and go hard at it. So
I'm with you there. No, I think you were definitely in the up. But offensive linemen are freaks anyway, so we can't compare you to the normal human beings. You know, that doesn't.
Yeah, and I was the average offensive lineman too. By the way, I mean, if you start talking about bringing in like Big Max
Gene,
oh my gosh.
I knew that's where you were going to go.
I have seen some things, but you always got a sneaky guy too.
I think about, of course, I think about Big Dan, but to me, the guy who I would think could just kill everybody would be Roland.
Maybe, but it's always, I never, Deke is healthy. Dan's Roland, Deacon. We call Deke is always healthy. So he probably doesn't do anymore. He looks like.
I don't think he would want to. I'm just thinking he could.
He probably could. But it's always the sneaky guys, by the way. Like, I'll tell you.
He's sneaky to me. He never did anything wrong.
He's 6 foot 10. He ain't sneaking up on nobody. But, like, I'm going to tell you right now, Michael Turner, he played offensive line with us. He's from Brookwood High School, came to Georgia as a tight end, ended up moving to guard, playing a little bit. Turner, we went to Wild Wing, 2 for Tuesday. How many wings you get that many free. On Tuesdays back then. So he ordered 20. He got 40. He also ordered a buffalo shrimp appetizer. And he got two of those. So he had two buffalo shrimp appetizers, 40 wings. We went to a movie over in Beachwood after that. We stopped by Crystal's and he got two double stacks and put them in his cargo short pockets and walked into the Crystal movie with two double stacks in each pocket. And this is back when double stacks were 99 cents at Wendy's, by the way. So, you know, if you're broken in college, we didn't get any money. You have $5, you go to Wendy's, son, you were set back in the day. So,
if it weren't for those double stacks, I'd be dead. I mean, I remember one time basically eating, one of my roommates came to me and goes, I don't have any food either. So I got potato chips. So I go, I got mustard. We had mustard and potato chips for dinner. That was it. Hey, we live like kings, man.
Oh, man. I had a roommate named Caleb Harris. For a year or two. He's a walk-on linebacker, fullback. We went to Kroger one day, and they had those little miniature frozen pizzas on sale for 49 cents a piece. I can remember Caleb reaching onto the shelf and doing this. We got like $38 worth of pizzas, and we raked them in. And that was all we bought, just like $38 worth of pizzas. That's all we bought, and it was awesome. All right.
That's the way it goes. So I love it. I think that's it's like Jordan Davis burrito from Barbaritos. Amen. I agree with that one. I think that was it. There are a ton of other questions and fun stuff like that about on the dog that folks need to check out, but we're going to save those for next week. Anyway, I noticed you've been out on the road. Tell us the last place you went to have barbecue, and we'll wrap up the show there.
Yeah, man. I went to one of the classic establishments last week, we went out to Zeb's in Danielsville, Georgia.
My favorite place.
Yeah. 60 plus years in business. Zeb Dean started it. I believe it was his granddaughter works there now, runs it. I could be mistaken. Somebody from Zeb's can correct me. I apologize. But Miss Pam is her name. And going back to Mr. Zeb, down to the youngest who's working there now, it's been five generations from their family that work there. And it's just a classic establishment, man. They got chopped hams, slaw, and stew. That's all they got. Oh, potato salad. They got potato salad now. That's all they got. And it was really, really good. So, you guys are wearing, and the floors are slanted, and the ceiling is 6 foot, 7 inches tall. Yeah, like you're probably in a good spot for barbecue. So, yeah, Zeb's out in Danielsville, man. It was awesome.
That's one of the best. It's just funny. Everybody who came through on Danielsville Highway, every musician, every NASCAR driver, every bootlegger, they all stopped in there and they signed a picture of themselves and stuck it on the wall. And it's been an institution forever. One of my favorite college memories is going up there, getting just absolutely lit up with you sit down and they bring out the food to everybody sitting at the table. And with that Wonder Bread, and you're just eating and eating and eating, and that stew was so good. And then going down over the Broad River Outpost and going down the river, drinking beer after having that incredible meal. And I'm like, man, that's living right there, brother. So that's as good as it gets.
If you go, you got to ask them to bring you out some of the uncut sauce from the back. So get the stuff that hadn't been cut down. Tell them to bring some of the uncut sauce from the back.
Okay, now we got a secret menu item from Zeb's. I did not know about that. Oh, we're going to try that. Okay.
Yeah.
That's our Thursday trip right there. All right, folks, that's all the time we have for this week's show. We really appreciate you being a part of it. It means a lot to us. We know we had a ton of people watching. That's great. I appreciate you spending your Wednesday night with us. If you would, hit the like button before you leave or leave a comment. It helps us with the algorithm. You don't have to, but if you like the show, please do. We will see you next week. Next week is going to be very interesting because we'll be talking about spring practice and pro day. So
I know we got to get some on-field content again, baby.
Yes, sir. I like that. All right, y'all take care.